Welcome to Dog Talk. Now here's your host, Dave McMahon.
How's it going, everyone? Happy New Year. Haven't been with you in a while. Took a little hiatus, a little vacay, relaxing around my house. Had a great time with my dogs. Hope you had a good time with your dogs over the holiday. We're back for the very first show of Dog Talk 2011. Wow! And I'm glad you're here with me in your car or at your desk at work, or maybe you're listening on your smartphone. You gotta love those smartphones. You can listen to Dog Talk anywhere. It's great. So anyway, I'll be here with you till 1:30, but I'm not sitting alone. No way. I'm sitting here with Wolf Starchild. Now, that is a great hippie name, and we were just talking about his name before I went live to air a few seconds ago. So Wolf Starchild is an instructor with the St. John Ambulance program. He's a dog first aid instructor. He's also an outdoor educator and is very knowledgeable on dogs, first aid for dogs, and also outdoor education. I'm really pleased that he's had the opportunity to take some time out of his schedule and come into the radio station and talk with me today. Now, for those that don't know who I am, my name's Dave McMahon. Nice to meet all of you. I'm a professional dog trainer, if you're just listening to us now for the very first time. I spend my life teaching people how to have harmony with their dogs. I help people that have problem dogs, and I help people teach their dogs to be better obedient. Always remember, an obedience-trained dog is an asset. An untrained dog could be a potential liability. Go ahead, write that down. I want to introduce Wolf Starchild right now. Wolf, welcome to the show.
Hello, Dave, and thank you.
Hey, listen, we were talking about how cool your name is, and you mentioned that your parents were hippies. When I heard, when you first contacted me and I heard your name being Wolf, right away I'm thinking, okay, that's German name. I love it. It's a strong, dominant male name. And then Starchild, right away I thought, how cool is that? Like, we're back into the 60s. So tell us about that.
Well, my parents, actually my mother's English and my father's Canadian, but they were sort of involved in the hippie movement in the 1960s, and that's where the origin of my name came from.
Right on. Now, can you tell us a little bit about your background as far as your education and also a little bit about your involvement with the St. John's group?
Sure, absolutely. As an outdoor educator, I spend most of my time in the outdoors. I work with special needs children, adults of all ages, and basically show them different aspects of the outdoors, things like tracking, things like how to survive in the outdoors, survival courses, things like that. I'm in college actually right now as a part of the Recreation and Leisure Program in Niagara College here in Welland. And I sort of I enjoyed volunteering in the community for quite some time. I've been a member of Scouts Canada for a few years, and I came across an ad on the internet once that said, "Would you volunteer more if you could bring your dog?" And it's like, sign me up. So I clicked on the ad, and it took me to the St. John ambulance site, and I was like, oh, look at that. I never knew anything about the therapy dog program. So I had just gotten a husky a couple of months earlier, and so we signed up, and that's sort of where it all began. I met some really wonderful people there, and sort of just moved along, and then they offered the pet first aid course. So I took the course as soon as it was out, and I thought, geez, I have to teach this course. I love it. It was a phenomenal course. Since then, it's only become better because we've been continually building the course, and that's sort of how it started.
Now, when did you know as a child that you loved dogs and that you had a chemistry with dogs? Was this something that happened as you were just a young child, or did you later in life become interested in dogs? I mean, how did that happen for you?
Well, I grew up on a farm in Niagara-on-the-Lake, and we always had dogs. I can always remember having dogs, and it just sort of, it's always been there. I've always had a passion for them. And, you know, when I was 16 and I was moved out on my own, I got my first dog, which was also a husky, and it's just sort of always been there.
Now, can you tell me about your own personal dog that you have right now?
Sure, absolutely. I have a five-year-old blue-eyed husky named Luca. She's a therapy dog with St. John Ambulance. And her and I, we do a lot of traveling together. She's been all over the place. And in 2009, we hiked the entire Bruce Trail together. So she got 800 kilometers of hiking that year.
And you never got tired. You just went and went and went.
Well, it was tiring for the first little bit. I sort of hiked myself into shape to hike. But yeah.
So you're gradually acclimating yourself to the you're gradually acclimatizing yourself, sorry, to such a great hike.
Oh, that's right. Well, I did the whole hike in the 1 year. It took me 4 months to do the 800 and some odd kilometers. So it was a good hike, and it really brought the two of us together really close, and she really loved it.
And now listen up here, listeners. Listen closely. If you're just joining us now, you're listening to Dog Talk on 103.7 FM, CFBU. We're broadcasting live from Brock University, St. Catharines, Ontario. I'm Dave McMahon. I'm your host. And I want to reintroduce my guest today in case you're just tuning in now. I'm sitting here in the studio with Wolf Starchild, and Wolf is got a cool name. We've already established that. Real hippie name. He's a great guy. He's the instructor with St. John Ambulance. He's a dog first aid instructor, also an outdoor educator, as I mentioned before, but hopefully you've just you caught that. If you didn't, well, now you know. And we'll mention his name again in case you people tune in later on. All right. So I just thought I'd mention that because I don't want you guys to think I have, Alzheimer's or I'm forgetful. I'm purposely introducing this man more than once on today's broadcast. Wolf, talk to me about what's involved in the dog first aid program. What exactly is involved in it? Actually, if I could just backtrack, when did the course first begin? When was this course originated? Do you have a ballpark?
Yes, I do, actually. The course was originated about 2 years ago. We started to put it together, and it was actually our therapy dog coordinator, Kathy LeGault, from the area, and she said, you know, we should have a course like this. We should put something together so that, there's first aid available, not just for humans, but for animals as well. And so it just sort of spawned from there, and the course has slowly been put together, and it's seen a lot of changes since its original inception. So then it's now finally been approved by council. And what they did is the St. John Ambulance Council found that there was definitely a need in the community for this course, and that's how it came to be.
Now, what's the content of the course as far as curriculum of the dog first aid program? Can you give us a brief synopsis?
Absolutely. It's very similar to a human first aid course, but everything has been changed and modified to fit animal needs, and it includes things like CPR, first aid, which includes like how to tend to broken bones, how to look for signs of poison, how to deal with ticks, different things in your home that you should be concerned about if there are any possible hazard to your pet. Now, I would like to stress that it is not a course designed to replace a veterinarian assistance. It's basically you are the first person on the scene, and what you do is it's sort of a stopgap between when those seconds count, just like in humans first aid. So when you come upon some problem, you know what to do in order to prepare the animal for transport to get him where he needs to go to a veterinarian for a proper medical care.
Exactly. Now, the length of the dog first aid program, I mean, it's not a very lengthy program. It's not too time consuming. It's something that most people that own dogs could probably fit into their schedule quite easily.
Absolutely. It's just a one afternoon seminar. Now, it's a hands-on seminar. It's not like a traditional lecture where you would just come and you'd watch myself or whoever's teaching the course just basically talking head, talk your ear off. We have first aid dogs available, which are not real dogs. Now, we don't allow actual dogs at the course. The reason for that is simply because it would be very traumatic to take your dog and to do all the bandaging and to do any of the CPR and first aid things on your dog. And if you accidentally push too hard or you do a chest thrust or an abdominal compression a little bit too hard on your own dog, you can harm him, and we don't want to do that. So we have proper dogs that were purchased just for that purpose that aren't, they're like mannequin dogs.
Yeah, now what are these rubber mannequin dogs worth? Are they worth a good penny or what?
They are. Some of the ones that we use are upwards of $2,000 a mannequin dog.
Some of these rubber dogs are worth a lot more than some of the purebred registered dogs that people purchase.
Absolutely. And we have one that sheds just as much as a real dog as well.
That's hilarious. And what could the cost be, the price range for such a one-day dog first aid course?
The course is $80, and what that covers is it's $84, and that includes your first aid manual and your first aid kit. And what we do is we go through the first aid kit and go through all the things that's in it and any things that you might want to do to customize that kit as well.
So basically, people arrive with pen and paper, and you're taking them through the journey of the program. Now, there's no test at the end. We talked about that before we went on air. There's no exam. There's nothing for people to be worried about. It's just wholesome, practical, logical, good information, right? There's no exam that they have to take for the basic dog first aid course.
That's correct. At this time, there is no exam for it. It's just a seminar.
That's great. Now, do you have any numbers at all as to how many people have taken the dog first aid course to date? Do you want to take a guess? And if you don't have any numbers, that's fine. I guess I want to know is how popular is it? Is it growing at all? Is your objective maybe to get it to grow more?
Sure, absolutely. Usually we end up filling the course, and we have a maximum class size. We usually try to keep it under 20 people, and it as the course has progressed, it's becoming full every single course that we do. We used to offer the course once a month, and I've seen it where we're running the course every weekend, or we're running it one weekend a month at three different locations, which would be Welland, St. Catharines, and Niagara Falls.
So I'm sure there's organizations that can host the seminar, you know, different kennel clubs, private obedience schools, and I guess they would just contact St. John's if they wanted to provide the location and host it. Or is this first aid seminar always located at St. John building?
At the moment, we only host it at St. John Ambulance Buildings, but I'm sure it is available. If you were to give the office a ring, it's in the St. Catharines office, we can certainly set it up and come if there was demand for it. Go anywhere as needed.
Can you whet people's taste buds and kind of give them a little bit more info on what you're covering in the dog first aid course?
Sure, absolutely. As we'd said earlier, I am an outdoor educator, so most of the teaching that I do has a bit of an outdoor slant. I'm always excited when I get people who say, oh, you know, I go hiking and camping with my dog all the time, because that's sort of where my focus is, although, of course, we do cover all aspects of owning any pet and for pet first aid. So we... you know, we look at when you take your dog out, what could be poisonous out in the wild, and what could be poisonous in your own backyard. A lot of people don't realize that something like cocoa mulch, which many people use to make their yards look really nice, has the same stuff in it that cocoa has in it, which is in chocolate, and that can poison your dog if they eat it.
You know, I'm aware that chocolate is toxic, but I did not know about the mulch. And thank you for educating me on that today, and also thanks for educating the listeners.
Absolutely. When we get into the more outdoor portion, we go into things like, you know, your dog, no matter what it looks like, can easily be a target for hunters. And the biggest tragedy that you would not want is to be out having a great time hiking with your dog and have it shot. So we get into, like, if you take your dog out, for example, put an orange bandana on it, or you can go to some pet supply stores. They have, like, orange hunting vests that look like a crossing guard vest. You can put that on them and things like that. We also get into traveling with your dog as well. For example, if you're going to be traveling to a campsite or to a hotel and bringing your dog, you can go to the dollar store and you can buy little luggage tags. So you take the luggage tag, take the tag out, and in the back you fill out your room number, your campsite number, and how long you're going to be there. Because, you know, God forbid you should lose your dog and you have to come back from your trip. Your dog is still out there somewhere. Someone is now going to know, oh, he's not at that hotel. He's not at that campsite. He's somewhere else. Because the tags alone aren't good enough if you're out of state or out of country.
So much information to remember, and all good information. So if you're just tuning in now, you're listening to Dog Talk 103.7 FM, CFBU, broadcasting live from St. Catharines, Ontario, Canada, Brock University. And I'm Dave McMahon. I'm your host, sitting here with Wolf Starchild. And I believe, Wolf, this is your third introduction. And we do that just because people may be jumping in and catching the show and tuning in just now. You can always listen on the FM radio, and you can always listen live online from anywhere around the world, which is always good news. Now, when people want to take this program, first aid, you know, with dogs, a lot of them are going to assume that they're going to be bringing their dog. We kind of talked about that a little bit before we went live to air. Are people surprised at the fact that they're not going to be bringing their dog to this?
I think that's one of the number one questions that the office says that they get is, can I bring my dog? And it was very carefully considered by council of whether or not to allow you to bring your dogs, because it would certainly, for some people, it would make the experience more enjoyable. But the reality is it would be very stressful on your dog. And not only that, not everyone's dog gets along with all dogs. So we wouldn't want the possibility of any kind of conflict between, you know, dogs that we're visiting. And we also, if you stress your dog out and you're wrapping bandages around them and you're doing some of the different things, it's going to raise the stress level of your dog as well, which could lead to more conflict if we have a class full of 10 or 15 dogs.
Makes total sense to me. Now, you've got a tip list in front of you. We've talked about a couple of things that are dangerous and poisonous to dogs. Can we expand on that?
Sure, absolutely. One of the things that the course covers is we talk a lot about bloat, which is a very, very life-threatening and dangerous situation that that dogs can get into. And we talk.
Can I interrupt you for a second? I got to interrupt you because I'm telling you, as soon as you said bloat, when I was a kid, I had a couple of Great Danes. Both Danes died from bloat. And certain breeds of dogs are more genetically prone to it, as you know, Wolf. And also the deep-chested breeds, the long-torsoed breeds, we got to be really careful with bloat. Sorry to interrupt you, but I just wanted to throw that in. Not a nice way for a dog to die. We had to rush our Danes to the hospital. And back then, there was no emergency clinic. So you had to contact the vet. And both occasions, the vet was closed. So it was after hours. So it was really, really emotional for us to wait around at the clinic until the vet would arrive. You know, 9 o'clock at night, they closed the office at 5. So I understand what it's like to have a dog die of bloat. I've experienced that. Sorry for interrupting it.
Well, that's no problem. And what we should let your listeners know, of course, is what bloat is for anybody who's unfamiliar with the term. Basically, when the dog eats and then exercises, it pulls air into their stomach. And then the air in their stomach causes the stomach basically to physically turn around inside, and it seals off the entrance and it seals off the exit of the stomach. So what happens then is your stomach doesn't know the difference in the dog, and it still creates gases. And so what's happening with bloat is the gases formed by the acid in your stomach are getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and there's no release. And of course, just like if you were to keep blowing air into a balloon, eventually it's going to pop, and that's a really bad tragedy.
Now, have you heard about the trick of maybe wetting the kibble down a bit? That's supposed to prevent the possibility of bloat. And there's another theory that you could elevate the dog's bowl, you know, elevate the bowl and maybe put the food in a feeding stand. It increases better digestion, you know, but then there's just the common sense things as well. Don't exercise them immediately after you feed them.
Right, absolutely. There's all different ways, all different theories that people have used to deal with bloat. What the course teaches is not just prevention, but signs of bloat. And they basically say if you see bloat, if there's a possibility of bloat, consider it too late. Like, you have to act now. You can't say, like, if your dog has a limp, yeah, leave it for a couple days and we'll see if it gets any worse or better. You can't do that with bloat. Once you've detected that there's a problem, he or she needs medical attention immediately.
Good advice. What other things are poisonous that we should really be aware of as pet owners?
Well, there's a lot of things that people have in our homes that are very, very toxic and poisonous to dogs, some of which are also poisonous to us, and some of which people wouldn't even really think about, like some of the floor cleaners and things like that that we use contain various chemicals that when the floor cleaners are wet, if your dog happens to come in contact with them, pine sol is one of them, and you just have to look at the ingredients and familiarize yourself with what they are. And if your dog happens to lick it, and it's poisonous for cats as well as dogs, they can become very sick. Even things like acorns, somebody wouldn't really consider an acorn to be poisonous, but there's different chemicals in a dog that if the dog eats an acorn, he can get very, very sick.
Yeah, I didn't know that one. You got me there. So we got to watch out for the acorns. The mulch is no good for the dogs. Were we talking off air something about gum, a certain chemical in gum? And I don't think we said aspartame, but there's something else as well.
No, there's another chemical. I'm sorry, I can't pronounce it very well, but it starts with an X. It's called like xylitol or something of that name. And I apologize for not being able to pronounce it properly. And what that does is it's in sugar-free gum. Sometimes it's in pop. And if your dog eats that, it's the exact same kind of chemicals that they use in rad fluid. And as most people know, almost everybody should know that rad fluid is poisonous for dogs and cats if they drink it. It's the same with his gum, as it's a kind of a like a sugar additive. So it tastes sweet, so they like to eat it, but it will it can poison them very quickly.
Good to know. Good to know. Hey, listen, can you tell us about what's involved in becoming a dog first aid instructor? Perhaps some of our listeners might be interested in becoming a dog first aid instructor. Can you give people a little idea as to what's all involved with that?
Sure, absolutely. In order to become an instructor of any of the courses in St. John Ambulance, you first need to become a standard CPR first aid instructor. So although I had the opportunity to co-teach the course, in order to teach the course sort of by myself, I needed to take the full CPR first aid course. So it's quite a road. It does take quite a bit. You have to learn all the human CPR, AED, that's the automated defibrillators, the electronic, basically like the crash cart, the home version that we have. So you have to be able to do all of that, and then you can get into teaching the dog first aid. That way we make sure that we can maintain a very high quality standard for our instructors at St. John Ambulance.
And what would the cost be for somebody wanting to become a dog first aid instructor? What could they expect on fees?
For myself, because I'm very, very involved in St. John Ambulance from multi facets. I'm a therapy dog evaluator as well as a therapy dog handler. So the course was picked up as an instructor by St. John Ambulance. But there are, like, if you wanted to be an independent instructor, you'd have to call the office to get the information to find out how you'd be an instructor that went out and taught the program on their own.
So for information on the dog first aid seminar that people can take, a one-day seminar, and also for information on even the possibility of becoming a dog first aid instructor through St. John's, you could go on the website or you could call them. And I'm going to have Wolf Starchild give you the website and the phone number.
Absolutely. The phone number for our local office here in St. Catharines, and that is located on Queenston Street, is 905-685-8964, and the website is sja.ca.
Thank you for that information. I'll probably get you to say that again as we get closer to the end of the program. Now, can I ask you a couple of first aid type questions, you know, just off the cuff here? And hopefully these questions will benefit some of the listeners. A dog gets stung by a bee. Quite often, people will immediately go for the Benadryl, or not to mention a specific brand name, but they'll go for, an antihistamine, and they'll give that to their dog. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, when your dog gets stung by a bee, it's important to know if your dog has anaphylactic reaction or not. And that's something you should previously may known. But if for some reason you just got the dog and he just got stung and he seems okay, it's important to have a good relationship with your vet to talk to them and say, is this medication okay? Because chemicals that they put in the medications, they change frequently, even though we don't always, like the packaging looks the same, but the chemicals that they put in them change with different regulations. So before you give any kind of medication to your dog, whether it be like a Benadryl or any sort of antihistamine type thing, it's important to contact your vet and say, which do you feel is safer, is the safest product to give my dog in this particular situation? And almost all vets will be more than happy to help say, well, I would recommend this brand name or that brand name.
Now, what about frostbite? Do we get a lot of problems with frostbite? Because it can happen to dogs, even if they're not necessarily out for hours and hours and hours on end.
Sure, absolutely. There's certain dog breeds, especially the smaller dogs or warm country dogs like little Chihuahuas and things like that, that the adage goes, if you're cold, your dog is going to be cold. It would be just like you running around outside with nothing on in this kind of weather. So we get into a little bit of frostbite, how to treat frostbite, what to look for signs of frostbite, and some preventative measures. And of course, preventative measures are just trying to keep your dog warm. As silly as they may be, a good quality dog blanket or dog jacket is always something you might consider. And for paws, there's different products available, like Utter Balm, and there's you go to your local pet supply store, and they have different creams that you can put on, name brand stuff.
I'm completely in favor of these balms that you can put on the dog's pads. It works as an insulation barrier, and you can also do it in the summertime, too, if you're out in a walkathon and it's really, really hot, and there's different, you know, protect-a-pad type ointments that can be put on the dog's feet and prevent the feet from getting too hot in the summer. And again, it works to prevent the feet from frostbite in the winter. How do you feel about dogs wearing dog booties and things of that sort?
Well, to a certain extent, humans are built very similar to dogs. And whereas you wouldn't, most people wouldn't go running around on a very hot pavement in their bare feet, it'd be the exact same for your dog. People think, oh, he's a dog, he's tough, they're designed for it. But your dog, most dogs spend most of their lives indoors. So they don't have the same kind of tough feet that you would if the dog was out running around all the time. So if your dog is mostly an indoor dog, you may not have that kind of protection. So if you can stand the booties on your dog, some dogs, when you put the booties on, they simply won't walk, they fall over, they do all kinds of comical things, try to get the boots off. But if you can put the boots on your dog, invest in good quality ones. Some of the ones you get are dollar store ones, they're cheap felts, they're basically like, you know, like a low quality shoe. They're no protection. But if you get a higher end brand, I would say something like Roughwear. It's a company that manufactures dog boots in the United States. You get something like that's a higher end, it's going to do better. And Muttlux, I think, is a Canadian brand as well.
Do you think that people, pet owners, are becoming overall much more aware overall about their dog's health, about their dog's welfare? Do you think that that people are letting their the way I look at it, I'm kind of stumbling and stammering here. The way I look at it, still today, it seems to me that people know more about their smartphones, about their stereo system, about their computer than they do a living, breathing animal that resides with them in their home. I mean, do you think that that people are becoming more aware about the necessity of, hey, we should take a first aid course. We should be able to intervene if our dog gets into jeopardy.
Absolutely. I have to agree that people are very knowledgeable about the electronics, but I think in this day and age, we're getting people who are much more interested in learning about their dogs and cats. We have the new concept now. I'm sure everybody's heard the term fur babies, where you know modern day couples, they choose not to have children, so they have dogs or cats instead, and they treat that like they would their child. So the tragic part is with our pet first aid course is unless you're a pet professional like a dog walker, which is the course is designed for, someone who works in a kennel or someone like yourself who's a professional dog trainer, a lot of the people come to our course and they say, I had this horrible tragedy. Now you're going to help me solve this problem so this never happens again. And if the message definitely to get out there is to take these courses before that tragedy strikes, because some people will take the course and say, geez, had I known this simple, the abdominal thrusting technique, my dog would still be here with me.
So you do think people are a lot more in tune now?
Absolutely, yes.
I'm finding at the dog training school that I own is that I'm getting people between the ages of 18 to 25 as my clients. And this has just been in the last few years that I'm seeing a lot younger participants in the obedience classes. And of course, we've got a lot of kids coming for training classes to learn to train their dogs. But I'm seeing a lot of younger couples, and as you said, with their fur babies. I'm seeing it. And a lot of people, young couples, are starting off with a dog and just kind of seeing how things will go. And they're using that almost as a pilot project to determine whether or not they want to have a baby, an actual human baby, with their other half.
I can understand that. There's different, obviously having a dog is not the same as having a child by any means, but it's, for young people, it gives them the sense of responsibility that they can't just, get a dog or a cat and not feed it, not take care of it, things like that. age range in the course, I would say it varies. I get people of all ages. I get fairly young people, teenagers, who are doing it because they're working as a dog walker or they're getting a job or a co-op placement in a kennel. And then I get some elderly people. And unfortunately, a lot of the people that we've had that are, you know, in the 30s, 40s and onward are usually there as a result of a horrible tragedy that's happened.
Wolf, we're out of time today on the Dog Talk Show, but I want to really thank you a ton for coming in today and sitting down here in the studio with me and sharing all the valuable advice that you've shared with our listeners. And if you could give us the St. John Ambulance website and the phone number again, if anyone is interested in taking the Dog First Aid program or becoming a Dog First Aid instructor, go ahead.
Okay, well, the phone number to our local office is, of course, 905-685-8964, and the website SJA, which stands for St. John Ambulance, .ca.
Thank you so much for taking the time out of your schedule, as I mentioned before, to come in and sit with us and just educate the listeners all about dog first aid and awareness. Thanks a lot, Wolf.
Thank you very much.
And I want to say to the listeners, you guys have been a great audience, a very obedient audience, very quiet. There's been no interruptions in the last half hour. It's been so peaceful. Give yourselves a pat on the back. You guys are a great, great audience. I want to say hello to a few people. I want to say hi to Kathy and Randy McNeil down in Crystal Beach. I want to say hello to Catherine and Dave LaBelle down in the St. Anne area. And I want to say hello to Ziggy Kruger, one of our instructors. Kathy's also one of our instructors. I want to say hello to Tanya Grattan from Thorold, who's one of our instructors. And I want to say hello to a couple of my new interns, Lynn and Alan Bravo from Freelton, just past Hamilton. They listened to the show today, I believe, for the very first time. And I want to thank all the listeners again for recommending to your dog friends that they should tune in to Dog Talk. And Dog Talk goes live to air every Friday, 1 o'clock till 1:30. And if you've got relatives overseas or in different parts of the world, they can listen too. Not from their car radio, but they can listen online. How cool is that? Listen, we're out of time. 1:32. There I go. I've pushed the envelope sideways. I should have stopped 2 minutes ago. I never know when to quit talking. If you have any questions about your dog behavior, or maybe you're looking for a little something, a little free advice maybe, you can email me and I'll be happy to give you a little free advice on how to fix maybe one of your dog behavior problems. Shoot me an email at k9mcmahon@aol.com, K and the number 9, McMahon, McMahon, @aol.com. And I'll be happy to answer any of your questions for you. And also, you can go on to our Facebook group. It's called Dave McMahon's Live Radio Show Facebook group. And you can let us know what you thought of today's broadcast. Post your opinion on the group wall of the Dave McMahon's Live Radio Show Facebook group. I'm out of time. Thanks for listening to me on 103.7 FM CFPU, Brock University, St. Catharines, Ontario, Canada. Have a great weekend. Peace.